We just stepped on their face with a hobnail boot and broke their nose. The way to the end zone, and Georgia is going to conquer the Crimson Tide.
So how about them fucking dogs? That's what I told them.
Go Dawgs. Go Dawgs. Welcome back to the 100 Sanford Podcast. It is your guy, Lamar Lovelace. I'm here with George Foster. I think he's on mute. He's going to come in real strong, though. I can feel it. Oh, wait a minute. Hold up, George. What you got balloons going on for, baby? It's your birthday?
I don't know what's that about.
Wait a minute. Hold up a second. It ain't
my birthday.
So wait, we announce you and all of a sudden balloons come up? Is that what you're saying?
No, I don't know. I think it's happened once before, but I don't know how you do it. Is it a hand movement that makes it happen?
I don't know what it is, man. But welcome back to the 100 Sanford Podcast. We are without our boy Graham. He is on vacation, family vacation. I ain't going to say where he's at because I don't want people mobbing him where he's at.
Big Graham, you know, famous and all.
Yeah, he's famous, you know what I mean? So wherever he's at, he's, you know, we're going to let him ride. But welcome back.
Hitting up Graham for all the, you know, the input, the inside scoops.
Right.
When you see him out cooling, you know what I mean?
Right. My man's out there with his family. You know, you can't be asking for, you know, little things right now. But hey, before we get any further, make sure you hit that like and subscribe button. We are in the off season, obviously, with Georgia football. But there's a lot of things that continue to go on. So we want you to hit that like, hit that subscribe button. We are on a every 2 week show process right now with some pop up shows, especially when we start talking about things that are pertinent to the time. Right now, it's the off season, so we're talking about Georgia football, Georgia things happening with the players in the combine, the Senior Bowl that just passed. We got a great guest coming on today to talk about that process, the scouting process, and what's about to happen with your favorite dogs that are moving on to the NFL. But Foss, I mean, how's everything been going, partner? You're on mute again.
Sorry, everything's been going great, but you know, it's for some reason it seems like football is coming back around slowly.
Yeah, somebody said that in another chat. They were like, they too, you know, they're bored right now. They, you know, not enough activity. And I'm like, hold up a second. We got spring football. I mean, we got recruiting that's always happening now with the NIL. Yeah,
it's always happening
like that. We got some coaching changes that have happened. Obviously, we lost Dale McGee. Heck, we should be able to, I don't know, bow our heads for that one, man, because Dale's been here since 2016. He's been Kirby's right-hand man, the lead recruiter, the guy that you don't know that closes a lot of deals behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. But congrats to him on moving over to Georgia State. But we filled that position. We have some new coaches in the house. We got some folks that have come back that people aren't too happy about. I'm trying to figure out, you know, why they're not too happy about it, but I think it's gonna work out and play in our favor, but
it'll work out great.
Yeah, everything all works out great.
First of all, I like to pour out a little bit for Dale.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I'm happy for him. Georgia boy, you know, he's been immersed in this state for a long time. Great on the recruiting trail. Has, you know, closed some deals for a lot of us, for a lot of guys coming into this Georgia program that won, you know, two national championships in his time here, you know, and been to another. So he's been instrumental in building what Georgia has been building. You can never put his experience and his time in Georgia high school and just having that connection is invaluable, you know. And I feel like with the new coach there, I think Kirby might have wanted to recreate that, you know, with forget his name that quick.
Josh Crawford.
He's has a lot of experience in the high school ranks in the state of Georgia with a lot of top programs. And maybe he's going the same route that he did with Dell. You know what I mean? Right. So we'll see. We'll see how that works. But we welcome all the new guys. I think you mentioned an old friend we have in Coach Tolan. The fan base has to understand.
Preach. Just let them have it, Foss. Let them have it.
The fan base has to understand that these coaches have strengths and weaknesses. Mm. They can be great at one thing, not so good at others. Coley Stent as a offensive coordinator wasn't the best. You know, we all know that. We all know that. But he also coached and developed some really good receivers on his watch too. Mm-hmm. You know, so we can't, and that's what he's tasked with doing now. We have an offensive coordinator, Mike Bobo, did a wonderful job last year. You know, scored a lot of points, a lot of yards, you know, kept up with, you know, picked up where they left off with, you know, with the last two Natty years. Coley's there to coach wide receivers, and that's what he's going to do. You know, he's proven to be pretty good at that. And so I'm happy to have him back in that role. You know what I mean?
I agree with you 100%. 100% false. I agree with you.
Fan base, Dog Nation, relax.
Man, you know, Dog Nation is never going to relax. Not now. Not now with everything happening in college football. But they got to relax. When Kirby's at the helm right now, I'm real chill. I'm real cool. I used to not be that way, but I am.
Listen, I was thinking about this the other day. Like, I don't get too immersed or whatever you would call it into the news with Georgia.
Yeah.
You know, as far as when it comes to decision making, I trust them. It's really that simple. It'd be hard for me not to trust a guy who's been to enough number of national championships. Let's go back even further. A guy who's been on staff, had a prominent role on the staff that won several before he got to us, and is been to, you know, three and won two. He has a winning record at the national championship at University of Georgia. I think he knows how to do it.
Exactly.
I think he knows how to do it. So I trust the decisions. I trust the decision that Coach Smart makes concerning that program until he shows me that I can't trust him anymore. Exactly.
Hey, Foss, you're talking about national championships. We got our guest who's just popped up in the green room. I don't know if Georgia fans are going to be too happy about this national championship that just happened this past season as we were going for the three-peat, but I'm going to let you bring in our guest. Big time. We're talking about the offseason, but Foss, I'll let you do the introduction.
This guy right here is big on the offseason. He has a lot of experience with the offseason right now in college and before plenty of years in pro ball dealing with the offseason. He's now the head honcho of the Senior Bowl down there in Mobile, Alabama. That game has taken off. Like, it has really taken off. I played in that game. It is not the same game. So he's been instrumental in building it to what it is now. We have Jim Nagy joining us today, and we are excited to have him. Man, how you doing, Jim?
Foss, how are you, man? Appreciate you having me on, man. This is great.
Oh, man, I'm glad you can join us, man. How has it been since you've been down there in Mobile now? How are you enjoying it? How is it different from the world that you come from in pro football? And just how are you enjoying it? The product is top tier, and sure. But how you feel about it?
I appreciate it, man. What year did you play in the game? I was just scrolling through our all-time roster. We're putting together our Hall of Fame class for this year. What year did you play? Was it like around 2000-ish?
2000. The game probably took place in 2003. Since I was 2003 draft, I'm pretty sure we played at the top of 2003. Me and Spice Adams, Terrence Edwards, Carson Palmer, who played like one snap. he was like, I'm done. I don't have to do all this. You know, Chris Sims, a number of guys, man. We had a good time down there.
That quarterback room actually was Cliff Kingsbury was in that quarterback room because it was like Chris Sims, Cliff Kingsbury.
That's where I met Cliff. And then he came to Denver too.
Yeah, Carson Palmer was the number one pick in that draft. So yeah, man, this is it's gone by really fast. This is just finished up our sixth game here. I've been in Mobile for a long time. We moved down here in 2007. It's my wife's hometown. You know, when I was scouting in the NFL, we had our son in 2005. And you know that life, Foss. I mean, it's tough. It's tough on a family when you're on the road 200 nights a year. You know, you did it, so you know better than anyone. So when I came home off a long road trip and she said, we're moving back to Alabama, I said, all right, let's go. So that's really why I took this job. It was a family decision. So when this job came open in the summer of 2018, I called our GM up in Seattle, John Schneider, who is one of my best friends. So it wasn't like a typical call your boss, you know, nervous phone call. I called him. I said, John, you know, the Senior Bowl gig just came open. You know, I think I got to go for it. And he's like, you know, you're damn right. You better go for it. So had his full support. It's been great. Like you said, yeah, it's a different game than when you played in it, man. I mean, there was tons of great players. I mean, just look at your class. You had the number one overall pick in your game. But, you know, it's just a different venue, you know, so that we moved stadiums 4 years ago. And there was a lot of old history at the old stadium, man. I mean, so much history at that at Ladd Stadium where you played. But you've seen the facilities in Athens and Tuscaloosa and Clemson. I mean, all these over the last 15 years, the arms race in college football to build these great facilities has been incredible. And then we were bringing these guys all down here and putting them in an 80-year-old stadium to practice and play. And it just wasn't. It wasn't up to par. So the move to out at the campus at South Alabama has been huge for us, man. It's a great obviously it isn't up to Georgia standards, but for us down here in a Sunbelt school, it's a beautiful facility. They couldn't have done a better job, man. It's only 25,000 seats, but it has all the bells and whistles to it. Great home for our game. So it feels different. It looks different. You know, there's a vibe at practice now that there never was. I mean, used to go out to practice, you could hear a pin drop. Now we've got music cranking and you've got jumbotrons on and it just, you know, all the media, I think we credentialed over 1,100 media members this year for practice. So it's just become a thing, man. And it's been a lot of fun.
And big event, man. I've looked at it. I was looking at the coverage this year. I said, man, I have to get back down there, you know,
you do.
And just, you know, take notes and see what I can do and bring it back to this platform. I haven't been down there as a scout in a while, and I haven't been in the game. I haven't been to the game since they moved to the new stadium. So I got to get back down there.
Yeah, we'd love to have you down, man, for sure.
Hey, Jim, I got a quick question for you. What goes into the process of selecting these guys for the Senior Bowl? Obviously, there's a lot of seniors all over the nation, but you only got two sides that they can play on. So what kind of goes into that process?
And I want to piggyback off of that, too. I've always wanted to know that because I went into my senior year with that as a goal. I didn't know how to obtain it. I just told Coach Van Hallinger, say, hey, I want to play in the Senior Bowl. One day, he was like, "Oh, really? This cool. Let's see what we can do." And I don't know how I got it to see the ball. I have no idea.
Coach Van Hallinger, that's a name from the past, man. I mean, that's when I used to go through Georgia. He, you know, Coach Van was a guy we used to meet with. But yeah, I'm glad you bring that up. I'll try to be as succinct with this as I can. But when I got here, they didn't even have tape in the office, which is crazy to me. Like I had to call the league office and basically jump through hoops for about 4 months before we could even get the all 22 coaches tape to evaluate players here. So again, I'm not like pointing fingers or throwing stones or anything, but when you do that, when you're not watching tape and having that process, you're opening up to like coaches' recommendations, agent recommendations. So there was just, you know, it wasn't done right, you know, in my opinion, you know. So what we've tried to do here, and George probably knows this because we follow each other on social media, I tried to build a real personnel department. We've done that. So what I do is I every year we're coming up on it here pretty soon here, guys. I mean, that hiring and firing cycle happens after the draft. You know, for coaches, it's Black Monday right after the season. You know, for scouts, it's after the draft. And so what I've done every year is bring in a new group of guys. And we had a female on the staff 3 years ago. She scouts for the Cleveland Browns now. But bringing a new group of guys every year, basically. This year we had 11 former NFL scouts. And then the hope is that we give them kind of a soft landing spot for a year, and then they can bounce back into the league, which I think we have 17 scouts that have come here for a year, you know, kind of, you know, waited their turn out one cycle and then gotten back in. So, you know, for us, it gives us credibility. We've got these guys. Again, we don't have a budget to like be in a school every day. Like, we don't have guys going through Athens, you know, every week, but right. We're at games every single weekend. So these 11 guys, I mean, between the 11 guys on the road, myself, the three other scouts we have in here in Mobile, and we were at 15, 16, 17 games every week during the college season. We're watching tape every day. Those guys all can, you know, download the tape from our server and watch as much tape as they want. Same as working for an NFL team. And then, you know, the last part of the process for us is, you know, we don't feel like we have all the answers. It's right to do it the right way and scout it ourselves and feel good about it. But we're building these rosters for the 32 teams. I mean, we're not building a football team to play games in Mobile after, you know, after the Senior Bowl game. So we want to bring the guys that the NFL wants to see, bottom line, you know. So right. What we do is it usually happens around Halloween time, first week in November. Once we get the board set after 8 or 9 weeks of the college season where we feel good about it, you know, I'll call up. I think I've worked on the same staff with 14 or 15 of the current GMs in the NFL right now. So, you know, I'll call, whether it's one of those guys, if they're too busy, they'll kick me down the line to like an assistant GM or a director of player personnel or something like that. And we'll just spend like about 3 hours. These calls usually take about 3 hours, and we'll just go position by position across the board. And let's just say, you know, for tight ends, we're bringing 8 tight ends. Let's just say that we like 5 of them that we feel like, you know, 4th round grade or higher. That's really where we try to live for our game is 5th round or higher on everything. But let's just say, for example, we have 5 tight ends that we really like in the 4th round or higher. We feel good about those guys. We'll throw those names at the guys of the league. You know, 95% of the time, they're like, yeah, Jim, we see it the same way. Those are our top 5. And then we'll talk through those next 3 spots. Okay, fellas, like if we had to pick today, here would be our next 3. Do you like those 3? Is there someone, you know, who would you rather see? Is there a small school guy out there we haven't seen that maybe you would like to see? So then we just have those conversations and we take really detailed notes coming off those calls. And then, you know, that kind of guides us on the bottom end of our roster. But it's a really thorough process. It's really helped us, you know, again, like creating legitimacy behind our process. And we actually have a real process. I mean, that was my goal when I took over the job, was to kind of pull the curtain back on this whole thing and show everyone what we do. But the problem was when you pulled back the curtain, there wasn't anything really to show. So we had to build something, and you know, and it's great getting these scouts that you know. Again, my dad was a high school coach, and he told me this, Jim. If you're gonna look to get into football, like you're gonna get fired at some point, man. Like the ball's shaped the way it is for a reason. It ain't gonna bounce your way all the time. So if you work in football long enough, I don't care how good you are at your job, you know, the quarterback's gonna throw too many picks or. You know, stuff's going to happen over the course of the year. Injuries are going to happen. You're going to have a bad year and you're going to get fired. So, you know, I really like the fact that we've created this, you know, soft landing spot, if you will, for to keep scouts in it. Right. So, again, sorry to get long winded. That's kind of how we do things.
No, Jim, that's a great answer, because I have a follow up to that at the same time. It's a great platform for the seniors that are coming in. Do you guys do your own personal evaluations to send back out to the teams, or is it just based off the teams themselves doing their evaluation while players are there at the Senior Bowl?
Yeah, so another thing we've done to really engage like former players and a lot of our alums, and Foss, maybe you and I should talk about this, you know, in the offseason, but we have group leader positions now too, and I like to staff those out with guys that come to our scout school program every year. So Phil Savage, my predecessor, started a scout school program years and years ago. Phil's a great guy, man. I thought it was a great program. I would always come speak at it because I was right here in Mobile. It was easy. And I would always come speak. And, And just to be frank, man, it was a lot of like young white, you know, dudes that were working in recruiting offices like Georgia's. And so when I took the job, I kept the program. I really liked the program. But the only thing I've changed up is I only open it up to former NFL players. You know, during my time in the NFL, I would look around. I'd show up at schools every day. And you know, you watch tape all in the same room, at least back in the day we used to. You'd show up to a school. You show up at Georgia. There'd be 12 scouts in a room. And, you know, there weren't enough former players, man. It just didn't make sense to me. Like, why aren't these guys getting done playing and transitioning into this profession? So that's what we've done the last 5 years is, you know, bring former players down to be part of our scout school program. And then one of the things we do, we bring them back during game week so they can be like mentors for these players during the week. And one thing I tasked them with is I want like an off the field assessment on those guys and how they were during the week. Like, you know, were they on time? How did they blend with their group? You know, how were they just to interact with? You know, what was their personality like? Because that's really what the teams are interested in. They'll make their own evaluations of what the guys were like on the field. And I do ask our guys to do an on-field evaluation as well, because then I critique their report writing process and things like, you know, to try to help them out that way. But the phone, when the phone does ring, and it's rang a bunch since the guys, you know, left a month ago, I was like, Jim, what were these guys like behind the scenes for you guys? Like, who were the problem children, if you will? You know, who was, you know, because these guys accept their invites in November. So we've got like all of December and January leading up to the game where there's a lot of interaction. And you can get a pretty good feel about these guys just from a maturity standpoint before they even get to Mobile. And so that's what a lot of teams are calling, asking about is, you know, just the maturity level and how they were with our staff and how, you know, on the maintenance scale from low maintenance to high maintenance, you know, where were they?
I think that's great. And I also think it's great that you involve the former players in getting to learn how to scout. You know, I didn't have that particular opportunity, or even I don't know if I knew about it or not. I just kind of did some reaching out, and I was kind of thrown into the fire.
Yeah.
I was there. Everybody's be gone for whether it's all-star games. My first year, I didn't go any all-star games. I was an intern, so to speak, you know, in my first off season. And I had to learn it just on the fly. And it was kind of like by design. My guy Ran Carthon, he was like, don't ask me anything, just do it. and that was by design. And it ended up working out. I ended up getting my own style of how I write my reports, what goes into it, how to watch film. But one thing I realized as a former player is that I had some natural things already that the average person just wouldn't have. Now, I had to learn how to evaluate the perimeter, but like things like the interior, the front seven, both sides, you know, it came naturally, and like the average person wouldn't have that. And I feel like it's the same way for other guys that, you know, a former DB might be able to evaluate the perimeter very well, you know, right off the bat. And so the learning curve is a little bit, you know, not as steep, you know, for those guys. And then to get to be in scout school like that, I'm pretty sure you've put some pretty good scouts into the league over the last, you know, 6 years just you've been there. So,
well, George, I mean, you're hitting on. I mean, that's what players don't even realize. They're scouting every day. I mean, when you're watching, when they don't even know it, they're scouting every day. I mean, you need to be, you know, taught report writing and things of that nature, but you've done the job. And that's the great thing about this program is there's no bullshit to it. You know, like we talk about salaries. We talk about the demands on the job, like the upside, the downside, like, you know, and we break it down college and pro. So like one day we devote entirely to college scouting, the other day to pro scouting. And then we do a school visit out at South Alabama just to, you know, walk the guys through what like a day to, you know, going into Athens, what that would be like. But again, we lay it all out there. And the goal, you know, to me, I tell those guys the first day, like my goal is two things. One, you get through these 2.5 days and you're like, you know what, this is pretty interesting. Like, this is something I could see myself doing. Or, you know what, like now that I've heard all this, like it ain't for me. And it's not for everybody. It's a hard profession. So again, if they, I mean, it's a 2.5 day investment. If you can spend 2.5 days and realize, you know what, like cross something off your list, like, you know what, like I want to stay in football, but maybe it's not scouting. Maybe I just want to coach at the high school level or something like that. But I mean, you know, what I'm trying to do is create like a pathway to transition, because it is hard. I've had some buddies playing the league, man. And when you've done something your whole life, I've got two really good friends that played in the league. One guy played for 9 years, the other guy played for 10 years. And when you do that for so long and you're in your early 30s and you've done nothing but football your whole life, it can be a dark time. It can be a difficult time. So that's all we're trying to do. Like with anything we do here at the Senior Bowl, man, we've got a pretty unique platform. And we're trying to use it the best we can in the football space to help out where we can. And so, yeah, man, I mean, if you wanted to come down this year and be a guest speaker, because I do bring in a couple former players every year to be guest speakers. And again, I can talk about it, you know, my 20 years in the league. But to me, that's different. I wasn't a former player. I can't speak to the same things that you went through as a former player. So I bring two guys down every year to kind of, I mean, this year we brought Alonzo Highsmith because he worked in college and pro. So Zoe could speak on both sides. So, but I usually bring a college guy and a pro guy. But yeah, we should connect on that.
We will. Another thing, let's transition to these dogs, man. You've been in the South a long time. You're very familiar, you know, with the Georgia program and the changes over the years. This year, you had guys, I think I had a one that had to sit out. But we had Tyke Smith, Javon Bullard, Marcus Rosemay Jack Saint, and Ladd McConkey down there. From far away, it seemed like all four of those guys, you know, stood out, two of them winning, you know, players of the week in their respective positions. What's your take on the guys that you it seemed like y'all hit it on the head with these guys choosing them from the game? Y'all did pretty well in that scouting.
Yeah, we had Dejon Edwards too. We had Cedric Van Pran committed to playing the game a long time, and then I got a call about a week before the game from his agent saying he was pulling him out of the game. So again, I don't know what that's all about, but no, the guys we did have, and you brought up players of the week. I mean, that's something else we've changed up too, is I have the guys vote on each other. So like, you know, mm-hmm. The O-line votes on the D-line and vice versa. The DBs vote on the wideouts and vice versa. So to me, that's a heck of a lot more meaningful for these players, you know, mm-hmm. knowing that the guys they were laying their hands on all week were the ones voting on them. So yeah, Javon Bullard, you know, won. Ladd McConkey won. It was great. Rosemay Jack Saint scored a touchdown in the game. Tyke Smith was the player of the game on his side of the ball. I think he had three PBUs in the game. So, yeah, I mean, you know what you're getting from the Georgia guys, man. You know they're going to come out here and compete. And that's why I really wanted to see Van Pran here, because we had some really good offensive linemen in the game. I think we could have as many as seven offensive linemen go in the first round. Wow. I thought said, like, being part of that group, it would have been good for him. But no, we know what we're getting with Kirby's guys, man. They're hyper-competitive. What he's built there – I remember talking to Will Muschamp a couple of years ago when Will got there, and he was like, Jim, I've never seen anything like this now. And we're talking about Will Muschamp's, you know, been a lot of winning programs at Texas and, you know, his own programs at Florida and Auburn and LSU with Nick Saban. So he's been around a lot of great teams. He's like, Jim, this is the most competitive environment. He's like, if you want to see something crazy, like stay to the end of one of our practices when we're running gassers. And it is like a, you know, it's like a bloodbath, those guys trying to compete to see who wins these sprints at the end of practice. He's like, I've never seen anything like it. So, you know what you're, you know, from my perspective, we bring Georgia guys down here. We know what we're getting.
Hey, Jim, I got a question with that. All right. So you can look at film. I mean, in the eyes in the sky, don't lie, right? You can see on Saturdays, these guys are balling out. At what point do you look at game film versus one-on-one reps that you might see in a Senior Bowl? Because now it's nitpicking time, right? It's the Senior Bowl. It's the combine. Everybody's looking for something to pull away from these guys. How do you evaluate guys, and how should NFL teams see these players as they've already seen them on Saturdays?
Yeah, I mean, every team's going to have a different answer in terms of, like, what, you know, what they prioritize. Everyone's going to tell you they prioritize the fall tape. There's no doubt about that. I mean, I'm not going to sit here, even in the chair I'm sitting in right now, and tell you what we do here in Mobile is more important than, you know, the 12 to 15 game season these guys play. I'm not going to, I mean, I would never do that. But where the Senior Bowl is important for every position is one, the biggest thing is it's like, you know, someone made a comment on Twitter the other day about, you know, someone having it. Why does this guy have to prove himself? It's not just about proving yourself. It's to make the connections. You know, as Foss knows, like all these decision makers are here in Mobile, like all the GMs, you know, the vast majority of the head coaches. I think we had 23 head coaches here this year. Those are the guys making the picks. And like as a former scout, I'm not trying to be disparaging of the scouting community at all. But like it's one thing for the Southeast area scout to go through Athens and really like Dejon Edwards. But it's a whole different, and he can sit in the draft room and pound the table all day long, but it carries a whole different, you know, weight when, you know, the GM and the head coach saw Dejon Edwards practice and they're like, in the back of their minds are going, okay, in April, when I'm sitting there in the sixth round, that's the guy I want to take. So, I mean, you can hear it from someone else, but these GMs and head coaches are just normal people too, right? I mean, they're going to be, when they feel more familiar with a draft pick, and I know this from the teams I work for, I knew that I had a much better chance of selling a player in a draft room if my GM went out and saw him. And like, what happens is like when I used to work for the Seahawks and say we played on the road against the Falcons, well, they'll fly out there on Saturday. Our GM's going to hop in a rental car and drive up to Athens and, you know, hopefully catch a game up in Athens. Now, if I knew that, if I knew he saw Georgia play live, I'm like, you know what? I might have a better chance now that John Schneider is seeing these Georgia guys, you know, like it's human nature. So that's really important. And then the other part of like, you know, about Senior Bowl week is just using these guys differently than maybe they were used in college, you know, different positions, or even, you know, you see a lot of guys in college though, as a wide receiver, like you never get pressed. I mean, they do at Georgia. You play Alabama, you play LSU, but there's some conferences in college football where there's no defenses to play press man coverage. So as an evaluator, you don't even know if the guy can get, if he's quick enough or strong enough to get off jam. So there's things like that, you know, that really help out the overall evaluation. But, you know, and then just getting to know the guys and then just, you know, spending a week. I mean, this is a pretty laid back. I'm looking outside right now in our downtown. Like it's a pretty laid back community. And these player, like this week at the combine, like it's crazy. It's very corporate. It's very, you know, a very fast pace. Like down here, I feel like I always felt this as a scout. You met like the real kid here in Mobile. And then by the time they got to the combine, it might only be a month later, but they've been prepped by their agents more. It's more corporate. The answers became a little more, you know, programmed by the agents where, again, at the end of the year, you're just trying to get a feel for these guys and who they are. And when you pay them a lot of money and they got a lot more time on their hands, what are they going to be like? So that's the value of a game like ours you know, these teams really connecting with them.
It's very raw, it's very raw. And I remember you talk about one, the competition factor and also getting to know the guys. I haven't been down there in a work capacity in ages. You know, I still remember some of these guys I interviewed. I still remember their interviews. Yep. I still remember how they were in those interviews. They probably wouldn't remember me from a fly on the wall now, but I remember a lot of these guys that I, you know, I had to do the lineman interviews down there, and I still remember some of those guys. And you talk about the competition factor, you know, in the Senior Bowl, you can have guys from Division II, you know, Division III. You know, I remember having to watch, you know, Ali Marpet, you know, and things like that. You want to see how they do against, you know, the top competition. I remember one of my favorite years was watching Aaron Donald and
Zach Martin.
Zach Martin, like that was like it was prime time, like it
Hall was, of Fame run, Hall of Famer, man.
It was football heaven. Everybody was at the on the end. You never see that many people at the on the side of the lineman side when one-on-ones are going on. That year right there, everybody wanted to see, you know, who was who. And you know, Aaron Donald, of course, he's a beast, but you know, you got to see a guy that could compete against the best in Zach Martin. And you know, he probably didn't win all of them, but if you watch Aaron Donald's tape that year, you'd be surprised if anybody beat him.
Yeah.
I mean, so for Zach to compete like that, you knew you were getting a dude And it was just great. It was just great to watch those guys go against each other. You get that opportunity at a place like the Senior Bowl.
Yeah, those good, those good on good reps are so important. I mean, again, you know, just the SEC is the best conference in college football. I don't think there's any real argument. And I'd say that if I was on a, you know, an Ohio State podcast right now. But you don't always go up against great players at your position. I mean, there's, you can cruise through an SEC schedule as a tackle and maybe not face a pass rusher that's going to go in the first four rounds of the draft. And then you get down here and you're lining up, you know, snap after snap against him. So, you know, the biggest difference for me in this role than when I was a scout, I'm probably a lot more in tune with the anxiety that the players have coming into the week. Like, it's pretty normal to know that, you know, if you're a small school kid coming down to Mobile, you're going to have some nerves and, you know, maybe be a little unsure of yourself. But a lot of stuff that's come through over the last few years, we do a Hall of Fame event, like I mentioned earlier, in the summertime. And Cam Jordan, the great defensive end for the Saints, who played in, I want to say, like the 2008, 2009 Senior Bowl, not to date Cam at all, age Cam at all, but he talked about, you know, he's like, I was first team all Pac-10. I led the Pac-10 in sacks. He's like, but I came to Mobile, like, I didn't know how good I was. He goes, I was really nervous going up against a lot of these guys I saw from, you know, these SEC schools and Big Ten schools. I didn't know if I belonged or not. I knew I was good in the Pac-10. But I didn't really know. And he goes, but then after the week, that's what really gave me confidence. You know what? I am one of the, and he did go, and he went in the first round, and you know, the guy's an all time player for the New Orleans Saints. And who knows, might end up in the Hall of Fame someday. But to hear guys like that talk about how nervous they were going into the week, it opened my eyes a little bit. But it is, man, it's good on good. And it's cool. It's cool getting the small school guys in. Unfortunately right now, you know, the transfer portal is really hurting the small school element of our game. These guys from the, you know, I when I say small school, I think FCS, D2, D3, anything sub FBS, they're all going up for that last year. They're all, I mean, just over the last two or three years, they're all going up. So we're really losing that part of our game. I hate that. And really now, like, our small school guys are the, you know, the group of five players, the guys from like Georgia State. We had a lineman from Georgia State in the game, or like a Georgia Southern. Like, those are small school guys now, which in the past, like, you wouldn't call a Georgia Southern kid a small school guy, but that's basically what it's become.
Hey, Jim, I got to go back one moment. You did mention Van Pran. He actually pulled out the last moment. We are starting to see that more and more when it comes to bowl games, where prominent players are pulling out of bowl games if they're not playing in the college football playoffs, a national championship game, something like that. Pulling out of the Senior Bowl, do you anticipate more of that to happen as well? Just based off of, like you said, maybe it was an agent talking to him. Maybe it was another person saying, hey, you don't want to risk injury. Do you anticipate some of that happening, especially with the portal, NIL, and, you know, and everything else going on?
I don't, just because of the track record over the last 6 years. I mean, I think the buy-in factor is at an all-time high for our game. And it is different. Again, I say this as someone who grew up with the bowl system. Some of my best memories are laying around the living room on New Year's Day watching bowl games with my dad. Like I said, he was a high school coach. So, like, I hate what's happened to the bowl system outside of the playoff. But if you take a step back for a minute and you put yourself in the shoes of, like, a family member, let's say, like, your brother or your cousin or your son, you know, has played 54 games at a, you know, the University of Georgia, and they're playing in the, you know, pick a game, you know, a non-college football. I don't want to be disparaging to a bowl game, but it's really what it is. It's their 55th game at Georgia. Like, is that really moving the needle? Whereas, you know, I would say that in a lot of people, I've seen it on social media, be like, well, why would they opt out of their bowl game and go play in the Senior Bowl? Well, because of exactly what I laid out before,
right,
you're going to have 32 general managers, or 30 general managers, because the two playing in the Super Bowl aren't here. Although John Lynch did come for a day this year. But, you know, you've got all the general managers and head coaches, and you can make yourself a ton of money connecting with those guys. So there is a difference to me. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the question. Yeah, I mean, like, but I still get, you know, when we have players pull out that are committed right before, for like, if a guy gets hurt training, because listen, all these guys are training before they come to Mobile. They get done with their game, they get done with the bowl game, or let's say they opt out of the bowl game, they're done at Thanksgiving. So they've been training for the Senior Bowl for 8-9 weeks. Yeah. And guys do get hurt. Guys, I mean, these guys are high performance athletes. They pull hamstrings, they pull groins, they, you know, fall and slip and break their thumb. I mean, stuff happens when you're training. But to get the guys that, you know, are committed and bought in and then pulled out at the last minute, I mean, to me, that's usually on the agent more so than the player. And again, I think when agents start to see players get hurt by pulling out, not competing, that's, you know, that's when it'll probably turn fully the other way. But right now, I feel like we have a lot of buy-in from the players.
Yeah. I have a couple questions. First of all, the senior, you look at a bowl game, is quote, not for the money. The Senior Bowl is for the money. So, guys are going to do, or at least most of them, except the ones that pull out, they look at that game as it's for the money. So I imagine you have more buy-in. What you made me think about the small school aspect, that just crossed my mind. Cause I remember, you know, back in the day, you'd have some guys that, you know, playing at East West, get some look and maybe, you know, get the call to go to the Senior Bowl and whatnot. Has that tapered off with the portal and stuff, or do you still look at those guys and has any happened as of late?
Yeah, well, you know, something happened a couple years ago. The Shrine game actually moved into the same week as us. Don't ask me why. Uh-huh. It doesn't make any sense to me. But this year when we did have a couple guys pull out late, we had to go get a couple guys from the Hula Bowl. And one of them was a tackle from Georgia State, Travis Glover, who came down, had a great week down here. I was super impressed by him. Really did a good job. But yeah, we're bringing right now, Foss, like we're bringing it. Yeah, I mean, a lot of the call-up guys over the years have been, I mean, Javon Hargrave, Jimmy Garoppolo. Like, there's been some really good guys called up, but we don't do it much in the past anymore. Just because the Shrine is trying to, you know, has tried to go head-to-head with us the last 3 years. But, this year I think we invited 138 players. And right now that's enough where we don't have to really call up during the week. If we get guys hurt, we can get through the week with what we bring to Mobile originally. I think the guy from Georgia State was the only player that we got on the phone with and got on a plane during the week this year.
And I also wanted to ask you, we had a little, communication about the, some may call it a, I don't think it's an epidemic, but of coaches, you know, getting tired of the college ranks and giving their shot to the pros. I don't see it as a problem that we continue to lose a ton of coaches from college, because it's, quite frankly, there's not that many positions open in pro football each year. You know, so you're going to, if you want to coach, you're going to have to coach at college, you know. But I think you seem to think there is a problem with college football, how it is right now. And what do you think it will take to fix that?
Yeah, I think it's a real problem. I mean, that's just talking to college coaches on a daily basis, man. Like, none of these guys are happy with like their quality of life. I mean, this isn't what they signed up for. Again, I think everyone's happy that the players are getting paid. I don't think anybody in football has a problem with that. I certainly don't. I think NIL is a good thing. I just think nothing put in place. And then I'm not even saying limiting what the players can make. I'm just saying, like, these transfer portal windows, and it's not conducive for these guys. And the fact that, you know, you're recruiting your room every single day. Like, it's trying to keep all these players happy because they can just bounce on you. Like, it's just not, like, who, I don't care what you do for a living, who wants to be tied to their phone 24 hours a day? And that's basically what these college coaches are right now. So, yeah, I don't think you're going to – there's only a finite number of jobs in the NFL, right? So, I mean, there's only 32 teams, and these guys are going to have to work somewhere. But I'm saying that if you gave college coaches right now a choice, I bet you 9 out of 10 would take the NFL job. If everything being close to equal, you know, they would take the NFL job just because the quality of life is exponentially greater in terms of, like – go ahead.
It is. Has it – You don't think that's always been the case? You think some guys would choose college?
Yes. Guys used to like college football because they felt like they were mentoring these young guys and making a real difference in their growth as young men. I think that's what motivated a lot of college coaches. And right now they can't even do what they want to do because of where the NCAA has allowed this thing to get to. So I think there's a lot of guys that would prefer to stay in college, but right now it's just crazy. It's not great on their families. You go. And again, these college coaches are making a lot of money nowadays. So the jaded fan will be like, well, what are they complaining about? They're making all these millions of dollars. Well, it's also crazy volatile too. So again, it'd be one thing if you're talking to a young kid now that's entering the college profession and he knows what this landscape is, then that is what he signed up for. Right. Like I hear that argument too. Well, this is what they signed up for. No, it's not. This is not what you're not 45 years old coaching at Georgia. And this is not what you signed up for. So I think the NCAA let this thing get way too far. Again, I'm not going to sit here and try to come up with the answers. Somebody's got to come up with some answers. And I think even shutting portal windows out in certain times of the year, the fact that there's a portal window open in December as these guys get ready to play in bowl games, and you're a coach trying to come up with a game plan to win a game on January 1st, and you've got a receiver who you don't even know is going to be at the game or not because he threw his name in the portal at the beginning of December just to kind of test the water. Like, there's so much nonsense that could be cleaned up really easily.
That seems like an easy fix.
So that's one of them. But like, here's an example. I've called three. I was thinking about this morning. I've called three FBS head coaches in the last 2 weeks. And those three phone calls, I'm like, what are you up to? They're like, I'm out fundraising right now to raise money to keep a particular player. Two of them were quarterbacks.
Wow.
These guys are freaking fundraisers now, man. Like they don't even coach anymore. Like they were literally like, I'm out trying to raise funds to keep blank player. But what are we doing? You know, like it's just so it's crazy to me. God bless the guys that are. And again, there's a fix. I mean, they can fix it. I mean, I really think where the way college football is headed is they're going to have their own governing body. I mean, this is probably enough for a different podcast, but like why these non-revenue sports like women's gymnastics and men's wrestling are governed by the same body as college football. Like it's how stupid does that even sound? Did it say where we're at with college football? It sounds ridiculous. So they got to come up with some college football's got to come up with something and govern themselves. And if not, again, I think the coaching profession is going to, you know, there's going to be an exodus, guys just going again. If you're in the SEC coaching right now, the associations you get with like big boosters, let's just use Georgia as an example. It's a Georgia podcast. Like if you're on the staff at Georgia right now, you know, a lot of the big donors and boosters around the Georgia program. Right. Mm-hmm. And you're probably pretty good friends with some of these guys because they're always there on recruiting weekends and things of that nature. And they're funding your NIL. Like, you know what? I'll go take a six-figure job working for one of those guys than rather put up with this nonsense. Right. You know, and a lot of those guys would probably want to hire a college coach because, you know, if you're trying to pay for all these players, you love Georgia football enough that you'd probably think it's pretty cool to have a Georgia coach on your staff, wouldn't you? In your at your company, wouldn't you? So, like, I just think there's, you know, Georgia lost a guy in the recruiting office a couple of years ago that took a job at Wheels Up. And I don't blame him. Like, I mean, Kirby's jet-setting all over the country on Wheels Up. Like, and now he works for Wheels Up. That's, to me, that's probably a lot better quality of life gig right now than working in recruiting for the University of Georgia. So there's a lot of issues, man. And it'll get figured out. They'll figure it out. But we're kind of in the eye of the storm right now, I think.
That's the part I want people to get, that we're in the infancy of this thing. And that it'll work itself out. It's too much money at stake for them to let it get just haywire, you know. So I don't see that happening. And I think people act like that's what's happening, and I can't see it. I can't see it getting to that point.
I'm with you. They'll figure it out. They'll figure something out.
Hey Jim, before we let you go, give us a guy that you pounded the table for in all of your scouting years, and it worked out for you, and a guy that you missed on that ended up becoming that guy as well.
Way too long a list on the guys. No, man, you never want to like take credit for a guy. These like where the way the NFL set up right now, in terms of like when I got into scouting, if you were the area scout, yours might be the only report in the whole system. You know, you made it. And then by the time you get to the draft, they might have a couple other guys. But the way, like right now at Georgia, you've got an area scout going through there. You've got a regional scout going through there because everyone splits the country up east and west. Then you've probably got a national scout going through there. You've got a college director going through there. Like I said, you might have an assistant GM or a GM who's in the area because they play the Falcons that weekend. And then when you get into the process, then you've got the coordinator on that side of the ball, the position coach on that side of the ball. So by the time you draft a player nowadays, like you've got 8 or 9 reports in the system on a particular player. So I'm not going to take credit for any of those players I missed on. Again, that's a long list. Like, just keeping it like regionally, Darius Leonard, the linebacker from South Carolina State. I love the athlete. I love the speed. I love the instincts, but he's 211 pounds when I went into Orangeburg, South Carolina. And I had a really hard time seeing a 211-pound linebacker playing in the NFL. And he came to the Senior Bowl and balled out. And he went in the second round, and the rest is history. The guy's been to a bunch of Pro Bowls.
I was not a fan of Kyle Van Noy. He didn't have a lot of – he just was very tough to me. And he's carved out a really good career for himself.
He was on the NFL Network this morning talking about how he messed up at the combine.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Scouting, that's the fun part of scouting is it's a constant learning process. Yeah, I tell young scouts, like, you're going to get better and better and better just with the reps. I mean, the more players you can see and evaluate and create that Rolodex of players, you'll get better and better and better at it. But to me, the reason why you usually miss on players a huge percentage of the time is you miss on the human being more than you miss on the player. The tape gets easier and easier. You know, Foss, like you talked about having to work on the perimeter guys when you had a pretty good feel for the big guys and you had to learn the perimeter guys. But and that's, I mean, to me, linebackers is probably my last position where I really struggled with. I was lucky to work on two staffs with a couple guys that won Butkus Awards, Matt Russell. And Dan Morgan, who just got the GM job in Carolina, those guys helped me through some of the linebacker stuff. But no, it's the human being, man. Like it's really, you think about it, it's a really short window for these teams to try to figure these players out. You know, like I just talked about all the players that are going to go through Athens over the course of a fall. That's a lot of people, but they're hearing about these players through the eyes and lenses of all these people in the building. These players have, from Senior Bowl until the draft, so like basically February, March, and April, they basically have 3 months to kind of tell their own story and let these guys, you know, spend and get familiar with them. And that's when you're a team, man, that's hard. I mean, it's hard to really get to know these guys. And then you got, like I said, you got to factor in the more money, more time. That's usually not a good situation for a lot of young guys that are 21, 22 years old. Probably myself included if I made that money, but I didn't. It's a fun process. It's you have to love it. You got to love scouting, man. You really do.
What I wanted to ask you, what's your favorite part of the scouting process? I know for me, I did some college guys, but I was in the building. I was pro. So that's, you know, I probably had about 13, 15 teams. So my job was knowing all of them. So that was tape. But luckily, I loved watching tape. It's football. Like I watch, I wish I could watch a football game right now. You know what I mean? So my favorite part was probably the tape element of it. Just watching these guys. And then especially when you get guys that you really love to watch. One of my absolute favorite times is when all the heads in the barn and you get to go watch some guys that, you know, you just wanted to see them ball out. I remember I was done with everything and I would just go back and just pop in some Tavon Austin and just watch him go crazy or watch Zach Martin tape and just, you know, I just love the tape part of it. What was your favorite part of?
Yeah, the tape's the most fun. That's why tape's by far the most fun. What things I miss, people ask if I miss working in the NFL, and parts of it I do. I miss the relationships out on the road with the other scouts. I used to like being in a new building every day, man. Going from Georgia to Clemson to Georgia Tech down to Georgia Southern. I mean, you're at a new school every day, and those, you know, it's just fun meeting new people, and you create a lot of relationships. I miss some of those relationships. And then I miss April. I miss, after Senior Bowl and Combine and Pro Days are all over, you get back together and you got 3 weeks to really put the puzzle totally together and really the strategic part of the draft. And that, you know, once you got the evaluation set, you feel good about the evaluations. Now, like the maneuvering, right? Like what, everyone's talking about right now, what does Chicago do? What does Ryan Poles do with the number one pick? Does he trade Justin Fields? Does he draft a quarterback? Like, I miss those, you know, conversations in the meetings about the strategy behind it. And then the brotherhood, man. I think you talk to anyone in football, a big reason why a lot of us stayed in the sport is you just wanted to stay connected to the brotherhood. And we have that here to a degree, but I do miss that in a bigger building, being around the guys and being around a team and having a locker room downstairs to go to and go out to practice every day. Those are the things I miss.
Man. Yeah, well, Jim, thank you for joining the show, man. Oh, go ahead, Foss. Okay.
No, I say that I agree. I say I still talk to a lot of the guys that I work with, you know, all the time, like daily, if not every other day in group chats. So, yeah, that camaraderie is the same as playing. You know, you get connected with some guys, and you just want to stay connected. You know, it's you find some really good people in that profession. I don't know how. It's just, you know, it's typically pretty good people, you know, a good mesh of people.
Yeah, because I think we've all been around good coaches. We've all been blessed to be around good coaches that have kind of all formed who we are, right? And then you become grown men, and we're all kind of the byproducts of the guys that coached us growing up. But appreciate you guys having me on, man. This was a lot of fun. Thanks.
Yeah, we appreciate you, Jim. And anytime you want to come on, give us some – you know, some little tidbits on some of our teams and some of the, you know, teams that are leaning our way. I greatly appreciate it. I wish Van Pram was there because my Steelers need a center. So I need to find out what's going on.
Yeah, Mike, I'll tell you what, man. Mike Tomlin was up in the middle of those O-line, D-line one-on-ones. I think he found himself some guys in the trenches. But, yeah, we'd love to have you down in Mobile next year. If you guys want to come down and hang out at practice for a couple of days and do your podcast from down there, that'd be awesome.
We're there. Sure. We're there. Great. All right. Thanks, Jim. We appreciate you.
All right, guys. Thanks.
All right. Hey, man, that was some good stuff, Foss. I mean, I don't think a lot of people see the game from that side of things. I know me. I'm like you. I'm a football junkie. I could watch film. I can listen about football. I listen to podcasts all day, every day. When I'm in my office, I'm listening to football stuff. I'm listening to Mel Kiper Jr. I'm trying to find out anything I could find out about what's going on during the offseason. If there's no game going on, I'm listening to. And you've actually talked about the scouting process, but it's a little bit different from somebody that's been scouting for 20 plus years, the NFL level, now running a Senior Bowl. Some things he talked about, I didn't even know. I'm like you. I thought it was just recommendations from the coaches. And he's talking about he's got an entire scouting staff that provides recommendations and then gets them from the NFL teams. I had no idea. My mind's
blown. He's running it like an NFL team.
Yeah.
Except he's not looking to, you know, draft the players from himself. He's looking to, you know, be the farm, you know, so to speak. He's the farm team. And I think, you know, doing it that way, it gives you a quality game. It gives you a quality week of practice and a quality game. I didn't realize that they didn't do it that way at first, you know.
Right.
No film down at on site. Like that's kind of crazy. I didn't know it was like that. And so maybe it did go off recommendations in the past. You know what I mean? But they have a good way of doing it now. And it shows in the product. Like they have a lot of players drafted from the Senior Bowl.
Yeah. And I think I read today it was something like 40 it might have been 45 guys or 40% of the guys drafted in the first two rounds or three rounds were from the Senior Bowl, which is a lot of guys. You know, guys. You know, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's some good stuff. Yep. That's real good stuff. Hey, I want to kind of get back to this real quick, man. I know we were talking about the coaches, the coaching changes. We talked about James Coley, wide receiver coming in now, wide receiver coach coming in, Josh Crawford. You know, quick, here's my – I think you were already touching upon it before before Jim came on. What do you think the criteria is for Georgia right now in terms of bringing in their coaches? I mean, I got my perspective because you had a lot of people banging the table. Hey, I want Terrence Edwards, Hines Ward. You know, bring me, heck, Todd Gurley if a running back coach. But what do you think the criteria is right now, especially with Kirby at the helm?
First off, I'd like to say I don't know this. This is my assumption. Is one, it probably has to be a tie between willing to put in that work. It's not easy working for the University of Georgia football program. You're going to spend a lot of time in that building. You're going to spend a lot of time recruiting. So that leads me to the next thing. I feel like he has the powers that be have to know that you're going to be, you know, an asset on the trail. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I think they hire guys that they know have a reputation on the trail, but also good coaches, and also guys that they think have potential on the trail based on their background and how they are as people. I'm sure they interview all these people, and they come up with some people that that they feel would fit in with the staff. Able to do the work and able to recruit. Recruiting is that's paramount. Recruiting is the lifeblood of good football programs.
Facts.
You know, I know it sounds like duh, but like for real. Like, right. And recruiting has changed. You know, it's a lot going on recruiting with the newness of NIL. It changes the playing field, so you know what I mean. So
yeah.
you're definitely want to get the top tier recruiters in your program, and you want guys that are going to put in the work the way that you want them to put in the work, because every program is different. You know, is the Georgia program? It's tough.
It's a different animal.
It's tough. It's a different animal. You know, same thing you used to hear about working for Saban in Alabama. So, you know, I think you're looking at guys that fit those molds right there.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I know one of the things that fans looked at, again, they were pounding the table. Terrence Edwards, I love T.E. T.E.'s been on the show. Great dude. Wish him nothing but the best. Hines Ward, you know, he's a Pittsburgh Steeler legend as well as a Georgia legend. But when it comes down to it, you got to look at the program that you're with. You got to look at the guy that's leading the program. And if you believe in Kirby and what Kirby has done with the program thus far, in my opinion, you have to look at what he's looking to accomplish in the next few years. We just had Jim as a guest, Jim Nagy. And he's talking about college coaches are now at the point where they'd rather go to the NFL versus than be in college. There's a reason for that. The reason is because they're working so much harder than what they used to work. So now, when you look at Kirby and how he's always forward-thinking, look who he surrounded himself with. Muschamp, Bobo, Coley, guys that have already been there before, guys that have been at the University of Georgia. You got Crawford, who is a college football coach, big-time recruiter. He has surrounded himself with lifers of the sport and guys that he's comfortable with, and he knows they know about the work and they're going to be committed to the work. Not saying that T.E. wouldn't, not saying that Hines Ward wouldn't, but when you're thrusted into an environment that's already chaotic, you want some stability. I think that's going to play out more in Georgia's favor moving forward than anything, which is creating stability. With everything going haywire, you want some guys that are able to kind of settle the room, get their guys, bring in their recruits, be able to build those relationships, especially with guys like Coley, who has that South Florida network. Oh my gosh, his network is crazy. Fans are already talking about they want five-star quick twitch receivers. This is a guy that can go get them. You got Crawford, who has that background from the Georgia region. Coley, all the way back to Texas, has that Texas region. I mean, there's a lot of things that people got to look at versus just getting, you know, having this love affair with our own players and things like that, which I understand. But at the same time, just kind of scale back, look at why some of those decisions are being made, and then you'll be able to look at it more rationally. And that's why I asked you, because I think everybody's got a different perspective of how coaches are hired, but still, I think it's just a different way of looking at it and wanted to get that out there to the fans. Before we get out of here, I got one more question for you, Foss. It's really happening on the basketball side. You know, the basketball team, obviously, with Mike White, up and down. But fans storming the court. We got two people have now been, you know, injured. Yeah, Caitlin Clark, they, you know, had a little skirmish. And then you had Filipowski from Duke go down with an ankle. What are your thoughts on fans storming the field, the court? And what do you think is now going to be done that two prominent players have actually gotten slightly injured during this process?
It just depends on what the schools can accommodate. Are you going to pay for the extra security to keep them off the court? How much security is enough security? You know, when you're dealing with a football field, you're dealing with a lot more surface area than you are basketball. So if you got 10,000 kids, 5,000 kids pushing toward a court, the court ain't but so big. You know, you're not gonna keep all them off the court.
Right.
So, you know, I say to players, be smart, don't be a dummy. Get to the side, get out the way, and wait till everything's going, or get to the locker room as fast as you can, as safely as you can, or move to the side. They're not running out there for you. They don't care about it's been both the people that have quote gotten hurt, they've been from the losing team. So they're not rushing, they don't want to celebrate with you. They don't want to do on any of that. Just get out of the way. Why you want to walk through that? Why you want to go through a storming crowd anyway? You going through it, you want to run through a stampede. How smart is that?
Facts. Yeah, man. I don't know if you caught it. It was on ESPN this morning that Mississippi State, they actually put up on their Jumbotron, do not storm the court. Meanwhile, they ended up losing anyway. It was like 5 minutes left of the game, man. They talk about don't storm the court. So they might have jinxed themselves. But they were actually, you know, they had security all over the place. They had extra police officers, things like that at different entrances getting onto the floor. But it's like you mentioned, man, I think if programs are willing to make sure that the security's there, it'll slow it down a little bit. But I don't know, man, from a football standpoint, too many fans.
Yeah. And well, stadiums are built better than they have more ability to barricade fans than a basketball court. You know, it's really no, you know, there's no barrier there between fans and you know, in the basketball court. You know what I mean? Like I say, man, just get out of the way. Be smart. Get out of the way. Don't try to walk through stampeding fans. You'd be all right. The bus ain't gonna leave you. You're good.
Facts.
Good. Relax.
Hey man, before we get out of here, I'd be remiss not to give my respects. A little bit of a somber note, because it just popped up on my phone, but I already knew this morning. Virgil, WWE, WWF legend, the wrestler. He was like the bodyguard for Ted DiBiase back in the day.
Virgil
passed away? What's that?
Virgil passed away?
Yeah, man, he passed away. And it's, to me, it hits kind of hard. That's, I call him Uncle Mike because that's my uncle's best friend. They grew up together, ran the streets together. I ain't going to get into all the other stuff they did together, but I mean, I knew him as Uncle Mike. And the first time I even knew the wrestling was fake, I went to one of the events. He comes up and hangs out with me in the crowd with me and my pops. And I'm like, no, that's Virgil. My dad's like, no, that's Uncle Mike. You know, he's always over at the house. Yeah, man. So I pay my respects to Uncle Mike, you know, passed away today, 61 years old. But yeah, man, all I remember him is Uncle Mike instead of Virgil. But, you know, watching WWE, that's what kind of really had me into it back in the day because I knew he was on the show along with some of them other wrestlers. But had to pay my respects out there for him. But with that being said, don't want to end on a somber note. As always, you know what we do. Go Dawgs.
Go Dawgs.
And we out of here. Thank you for listening to the 100 Sanford Podcast. Tune in weekly to hear fresh content from the 100 Sanford Podcast every Thursday, but also with some pop-up shows every now and then as news breaks. You can also follow the content on our website, www.100sanfordpodcast.com, and email us at dawgs@100sanfordpodcast.com. Lastly, reach out to us on social media streams. For Twitter, it's @100Sanford, but on IG, TikTok, Facebook, and other accounts, it's 100 Sanford Podcast. All right, folks, that's it. And as usual, see you at 100 Sanford.